Okay, McGill Assessor. Okay, so there's many different Pirushim on the Megillah, and there are many different Midrashim on it as well. Not all the Pirushim go entirely with the Midrashim. Some of them do, some of them don't. So we're just gonna read the Pesukim with Rashi, and then I'll speak out the Gra and some of the Malbim as well, and then maybe a couple of others. Okay, Vahibi Me Achashverosh, who Achashverosh? It was in the days of Achashverosh, he was Achashverosh. Hamoilech Mehud Bakush, who was the king who reigned from Hoidu until Kush. Shalav Esri Umeyah Medina, 127 Medinas. So, first of all, okay, so let's see Rashi. Vahibi Me Achashverosh, Melech Paras, he was a king of Persia. Shemolach Tachas Koresh. He succeeded Koresh. L'soif shivim shana shal Golos Bavel. This is at the end of the 70 years of Golos Bavel. Koresh was the king who allowed the Jews to rebuild Beis HaMikdash, but then Achashverosh, well then the decree was stopped. I'm not sure if it was actually Koresh who stopped it or it was Achashverosh, but Achashverosh was definitely not interested in allowing them to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash and to let them go back. So they were really they were stuck in the middle. They were supposed to be going back, but it was towards the end. But they found themselves under Achashverosh's rule. Who Achashverosh? Who Berisha mitchilas vatzayv? So Rashi's bothered. Why does it repeat itself? Who Achashverosh? He is Achashverosh. So Rashi explains. It's saying he was Achashverosh, the same one from the beginning till the end. Even though at the end of the story he appears to. You know, he come around and ends up killing Haman and allowing the Jews to kill their enemies. But really, he was the same Rasha from the beginning till the end. The Gra learns a little bit differently. The Gra learns that who Achashverosh is because there was another Achashverosh. There was another Achashverosh who was a king, who was the father of Daryavish. Who was, I think, a Madai. He was from one of the kings of Madai. And he preceded Achashverosh, the famous Achashverosh, by a couple of generations. And that Achashverosh was not a king over the entire world. He was only a king over Paras and Madai. So we're distinguishing this Achashverosh, who Achashverosh, the Achashverosh, who was the Moilech Mehud Vakush, not the Achashverosh, who was only a king of Paras and Madai, but Achashverosh, who was later, who reigned over from all 127 Medinas from Hoidu v'ad Kush. And there's a machlokes in the Gemara, if Hoidu and Kush are next to each other or on the opposite sides of the world. Either way, it's saying either that he was all the way from Hoidu until Kush, or it means that he was Moilich over the entire world, just like he was Moilich over Hoidu and Kush, which are next to each other.
So Turkey?
Oh, no. Nowadays, Hoidu means Turkey.
India.
India. Kush is Africa.
Ethiopia. I saw an interesting shot in Steinsaltz's footnote, marginal note, says that the first Mandamah is very understandable because the Persian Empire is known from Herodotus and other Greek sources that the Persian Empire extended from India on the east to Ethiopia on the west. So that, but the other Mandamah is harder to understand. How can they be next to one another? Right. So one points out the Kush there is not Kush East Ethiopia, but it's the Hindu Kush mountains of Afghanistan, which is next door to India.
So what's a Medina? A Medina, the Gra says, is basically a we usually like translate it as a state or a province. I think the Gra explains that it means it's a central city which is ruled by a nobleman or by a king, and it's surrounded by many other cities, many smaller cities.
Like a city-state, but
sort of like a city-state.
Whatever
right.
The Persian Empire was, the history of the Persian Empire was organized in provinces.
In provinces.
Which had a satrap, which was ruled by a satrap, and the Achashverosh, we mentioned later, Zerah HaMedinos.
Right, Zerah HaMedinos, right. Okay. Okay, so let's see Rashi. Mehoidu Vad Kush. HaMoylech HaMeyah V'Esem V'Shav HaMedinois K'moish HaMoylech MeHoydu V'Kush O'inim Zeh Tuzeh. So this, he's going like the man, the Omar, that they're next to each other. That he reigned over the 127 just like he reigned over the Hoydu V'Kush, which were next to each other. V'Chein Ki Hu Roide V'Chol Eber HaNohar MiTafsach V'Ad Aza, which is in Malachim, a similar kind of thing that he ruled over. He ruled over the entire Eber HaNohar from Tafsach until Aza. What does that mean? Aren't they right next to each other? Yes, it means Shahi Roida Bechol Eber HaNohar K'moish Hu Roida MiTafsach Ad Aza, which are next to each other.
And the Nohar there is the Euphrates. The
Nar
reference to
the Nar. Okay. I'm not sure who it's referring to over there.
That's David Melech, I think.
Is it? David Melech? Okay. Bayom Mahim, Kishavis HaMelech HaChashverosh HaKisei Malchusoi Asher B'Shushan HaBiro. In those days, when the Melech HaShverosh sat or was sitting on his throne, Asher B'Shushan HaBir, which was in B'Shushan HaBir. The next pasuk is a continuation. B'Shnas Shalosh Lamalchus. So in those days, when he was sitting on his throne, B'Shnas Shalosh Lamalchus, which was in the third year of his reign, Asa Mishneh L'Chol Sar Ba'Avadov, he made a feast for all of his officers or his noblemen, Va'abadav, and his servants, Chel Paras Umadai, the either means the officers or means the soldiers of Paras Umadai, Hapartamim, also another word for noblemen, Vesari Hamedinois Lefanov, and the officers of the, or the rulers of the Medinois before.
Question.
Yeah.
When this say third year, Is this third year bestowed on Jewish understanding, or is this third year?
Is it based on the
Jewish definition of
the year?
The year being that it begins in Melech, begins in Nisan, where does it mean third year, third, full year?
I think it means full year. I think it means.
Just that basically isn't.
Right, 12 months. I think so, yeah. So Rashi says, Kishavas HaMelech HaChashverosh. What was the point of this Mishneh? And why was it made? Why did he make it when he sat on his throne? Kishneskayim HaMalchus V'yodai. When the kingship was Neskayim V'yodai, was solidified in his hands. That's what it means when he sat on his throne. And that's when he made the Mishneh. Rabbi Seinu Pirshu and Chazal explained it in Acher Maseches Megillah that it means that it was Nisyash V'daitoy, that now he made a calculation that the 70 years of Gaulus Babel had already expired, had already finished, ended, and now he was confident that there would no longer be any more Geula, and that's why he made the Mishneh. The Gra explains that. That really what was going on over here was that we know that there was a Shlomo HaMelech had a throne, a very special throne, that was, I guess it was like the, was famous throughout the world, and it was the envy of other kings. So HaChashverosh would have liked to actually use the throne of Shlomo HaMelech, but he wasn't able to. So he had them build a throne which was similar to Shlomo HaMelech's throne. But the problem was that until now, the capital of the kingdom, of the empire, was in Babel. It had always been in Babel. Had been so since the Babylonian Empire. But the throne can only have been built in Shushan. And the Gra explains because that's where the builders, the experts, knew how to build it, were living in Shushan. And he couldn't transport the throne to Babel, to the capital, because it was too big, it was too unwieldy. So therefore, Achashverosh decided to make a new, to establish a new capital city for the empire, which was in Shushan, all because of this throne. And obviously it wasn't just because of a throne, but that was a symbol of, you know, of his greatness, of his power. So in the third year, that's why he made the Mishneh. In the third year, that it took 3 years to build his throne, The third year, when they finished the throne, he made the Mishneh. He made the Mishneh, the feast, the party. And the Gro explains, what are Sarim and what are Avadim? So he brings a Gemara, an interesting Gemara, that the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had a student who was very sick. And he came to him and he asked him to daven for him. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai told Rabbi Chanina ben Doisa, who was another student of his. Rabbi Chanina ben Doisa was known as a very pious person, very big tzaddik. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Rebbe, told his student, Rabbi Chanina ben Doisa, daven for this other person. And Rabbi Chanina ben Doisa davened very intently, and the person was saved. And so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's wife said to him, is Chanina ben Doisa greater than you? That you couldn't daven? You told him to daven for him? You weren't sure that your tefillah would be answered? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, no, it's just that I'm like a sar lefnei hamelech, I'm like an officer before the king, and he is like an eved before the king. So what does that mean? What's he saying? What's a sar and what's an eved? So the girl explains that a sar, in this context, means somebody who is a talmid chacham, someone who spends all his days and nights learning and is extremely well-versed in the Gemara tells us about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that he knew every single part of the Torah. An eved, a servant, is somebody who sees the Pnei HaMelech. He's the person, he lives, he's not a nobleman, he's not a position of power, but he lives in the palace. He's very close to the king. He's a personal connection to the king. Whereas a nobleman, or a duke, or a count, would be like that's a sar. So he's great, he has a certain amount of his own power, but he doesn't have the same personal connection to the king. Whereas the eved is, he's the servant, or the, he's around the king every day. He sees him, he's the misharis, he's mishamish.
You wonder if we could translate that into the way the imagery we use every day, some of us are like sons and eved, we left each other, like Avadim, and the son, eved's got to serve Hashem and nullify himself. The son is much closer, but it's the same type of thing. So the son would be like the one learns Torah, he'd be like the Tsar. He's very close to his father, he lives in his house.
Right, so a Tsar is also called, someone who learns Torah is also called the son.
Right.
It's true. In a way, someone who learns Torah is closer, he's like a son. In other ways, he's not as close. In other words, an Eved, right, in this context, means somebody who, the Gro explains, means someone who's always davening. The Gemara tells us about the Hasidim of Rishayim, the early Hasidim, who used to spend almost the entire day davening, and they would prepare themselves with kavanas,
right,
and they were very pious, and they were not as great a level because they weren't being oisek in Torah the whole day, but on the other hand, they had a certain advantage that they were closer in a way. They had a more personal, closer. They had a closer in. They had a way into Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that's just a martial analogy to Sar Vavada. So Chel Paras Umadai, the Gro explains that there's a difference between Paras Umadai, the Partimim, and the Sari Hamdino Islafana. The Partimim, the Gro explains, are the noblemen who descend from royal ancestry. They're the aristocracy. And they are Persian and Median. So they are sort of the same family or the same nation as Ahasuerus himself. So he attributed them more honor, but he didn't just divide the Partimim. Let's say those would be like an analogy, like in England you have the dukes and the counts who are also of aristocracy, they also of royal blood. They're not kings, but they are the same family, or the same group of families. So he invited not just them, but also their chel, their chayolis, their soldiers, and their hosts. The Sarei HaMedinos, those are the Medinos, the 127 Medinos, who weren't nations, who weren't Persians and Medians. They were all other nations, all other ethnicities, nationalities. So it was kind of a political move that he invited them. It wasn't a personal thing, it was just a political move that he had to invite them, so he didn't invite their hosts and their soldiers.
Are these 127 Medinos, it's like, we read in Parsha Noach about the 70 nations, are these like, parts of the, I mean, could these be tricked? Could we explain it if we looked into it deeply?
Possibly. I don't know. It's kind of hard to see. It's kind of hard to figure out what the 70 nations are nowadays.
Yeah, but maybe what they were. Wonder why. Maybe they could even then. Maybe they don't.
Particularly post Sancheirin, you know, Bibel is almost so.
We know later that it says that each Medina had its own lashon and its own language and its own ksav, its own writing.
This corresponds in history. We learn this. You know, they were very, very powerful until they had the war with the Peloponnesian with the Greeks. So. Pretty much corresponds to that.
You know? I think that the story said that was Dariush, that came after Achashverosh. Darius, who, waged war with the Greeks. Beharoisa is Oisher Kivoy Machusa. When he showed Oisher Kivoy Machusa the richness, the wealth of the honor of his kingship, the Esyakar Teferes Gidulasai, also the honor, the glory of Teferes Gidulasai, of his greatness, Yomim Rabim, many days he was showing them his greatness and his wealth. How many days? Shmoinu Ma'asyo, 180 days. The Grah makes a cheshbet that brings from Chazal that there were 1,080 treasure hoards that Nebuchadnezzar had. And they were all inherited, went down to the kings of Babel, and Achashverosh got his hands on them. And each day he would show them six of those treasure hoards, and it comes out to 180 days. What was the point of all this? The point of all this was to show them his tremendous wealth, was to impress them, because he had just started his malchus just a few years before that. And he was a little bit unsure, a little bit shaky, and this was to kind of to impress them, to show them that he wasn't truly a great king. Why was he so shaky? Well, one of the reasons is because he's establishing a new capital city in Shushan, something that he's deviating from generations before. The Malbim interprets the whole Indian over here a little in a more political light. He says that Achashverosh was struggling with a Achashverosh, the Chazal say, used to be a head, used to be just a plain person. It wasn't a nobleman. There's different views in that in Chazal whether he was of royal blood or not. But the Malbim was going with that view that he was just a stable boy, even in that stable way it could be that he was from Persia. He was captured, but if he was just a headyite. And he came to power through his money. Basically, he had a lot of wealth, and he rose to power that way. And once he rose to power, he was able to conquer the rest of the 127 Medinas. And he took for his wife, the main thing was that he took for his wife Vashti. Vashti was the daughter of, I think it was Belshazzar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so she was a granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. So she was of royal blood. So she was the next direct line from the Babylonian Empire. So Achashverosh was very insecure. He felt he was, on the one hand, he wanted to be recognized as a melech from his own right. He wanted to be considered a melech from his own right, not because he inherited it from Vashti, not because he married into it. He wanted to be considered a melech in his own right who conquered his own empire. And the Bible distinguishes between two kinds of rulers. One is somebody who inherits it from because he's of the royal line, or because he marries into it, or because he is appointed by the people. His malchus, his rulership is much more limited. He can be deposed, and he has certain obligations to the kingdom. Whereas a king who kind of asserts power by conquers by his own power. He can rule by his own whim, and nobody can do anything about it. So Achashverosh was anxious to make sure that everybody knew, understood that he was a melech of the second type. That he didn't just inherit the malchus from Vashti, that he was a melech in his own right. So that was the purpose of his establishing the capital city in Shushan. It was to make that point. It was to make the point that I am my own, I can do whatever I want. I don't have to go with the I don't have to comply or conform to the previous generations of kings. I can do my own thing and make my own, start my own line.
So he according to this, then he conquered all these civilizations, right? I mean, he conquered all these states.
So I'm not sure how much he conquered and how much he kind of fought his way into.
I mean, the hard thing to understand is they try to Chazal, they portray him as some sort of a goof, kind of an idiot and everything. He seems to be pretty smart. I mean, he get in there and the way he's able to manipulate things and conquer all these powers. I mean, he doesn't seem to be so,
right.
He does some stupid things, but.
Well, it is machlokes in the Gemara, right? If he's a melech tepish or melech chacham, you're right. What, you mean?
He seems pretty wise.
Seems to be pretty
have all those
shrewd.
A king there and to be able to do what he did, I mean. Yeah.
Again, so, like I said before, there's many different pirushim, many different explanations of the whole parasha,
right.
And the whole story, all the line of that, all the events that happen. So the Malim takes one approach, the girl takes another approach, doesn't necessarily concur with all the other, all the Pirushim of Chazal.
I see.
Ubimlois Hayamim Ha'ela. And when these days were finished, the completion of these days, Asa HaMelech L'chol Ha'am HaNimtzim V'Shushan HaBira, the Melech made for all the people who were found in Shushan, the capital. Why were they found, by the way? Because he came from Babel to Shushan. Babel was the original capital. He came from Babel to Shushan, so they were Nimtzim, they were found there. L'migodol V'ad Katon, from great to small, Mishteh Shivas Yamim, a feast 7 days, v'chatzar ginas Bisan HaMelech, HaMelech in the courtyard of the garden of Bisan HaMelech. The Gro explains Bisan HaMelech means this house, a little house that was in the garden where they go to relax. In the garden of a king, they would have like this little house. That's Bisan HaMelech. So he put all the people, Migadol Vad Katon of Shushan, in the chatab. What do you think would have been the point of this 7 day mishteh? So the Malbim explains that it was to show that Shushan is now the capital. Shushan is now the important place, and not only is it the important place, but even the smallest, the lowliest person in Shushan is equal in the eyes of Achashverosh to the highest nobleman, the highest officer. And that's why he invites everybody in Shushan. And where does he put them? In the Chatzar Ginas Bisan HaMelech, that's in the most high, exalted place in the palace. Not a place where common people are usually put. And now it goes on to explain, to elaborate the great wealth that was present at his party. Chur karpas uscheles. So what is chur?
Chur is white.
Chur is white. I think it's linen.
Chiver.
Ah, okay.
I don't know.
I was trying to look at the right. Chur karpas uscheles is.
Green.
Carpus is green, and Chelis is blue. Which were held by ropes of vutz, which is linen, v'argamon, and purple wool. Galile kesef, on wheels of silver, v'amudei sheish, and pillars of sheish. Mitois zohav v'chesef, beds of gold and silver. Al ritzvas bahat v'sheish, on a floor of bahat v'sheish, v'dar v'secharis, which are four different kinds of gemstones. What were these? So the girl explains that these were beds, that they didn't sit on chairs, they leaned on
couches,
and they were supported by pillars of shayish. Sheish is shayish, which is marble. Pillars of marble, which were set in galile kesef, wheels of silver, and then from those were ropes of linen and argamon, which were holding up begadim, holding up garments of chur karpas and chelas. And the Malam explains that since they were in the gina, in the chatzar, gina, they were outside, so they had these little canopies to protect over them.
Like when they did their eating and drinking, it was not just for sleeping, they did their eating and drinking on couches.
I'm sorry, what?
They did their eating and drinking on couches.
On couches, right.
We don't pay stuff.
Wait, with the Hasebel, we don't pay
for the 4 cups of Pesach.
Right, right. Actually, the Gemara says that the Parsiim, the Persians are became, they're more knowledgeable about Haseva, about leaning, than we are. Which not just means, doesn't just mean leaning, but also means drinking when you lean. The hashka is bechle zahav, and giving to drink with chle zahav, with golden vessels, with chelim, mikelim, shoinim, and kelim from various vessels, and we'll see there are many different pirushim, kelim, mikelim, shoinim, v'yein malchus, and kingly wine, rav kiyad ha-melech, abundant, like the kiyad ha-melech, like the ability of the king. So what is the kelim kelim shoinim? Rashi says, mishunim zemi ze. They were different from each other. All the vessels were different from each other.
Wow.
So it wasn't just all one set of galut. It was of kelim. It was all different types. Rabbi Senu darshu, masha darshu, that it's going on the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, that's the drash. The Gra explains the kelim mikelim shoinim means that. Second, let me just check. Right, that one person, if you drink from a kli one time, you wouldn't drink from the same kli twice. If you drink from a cup, they would immediately give you another cup. That was just to show the abundance, the wealth, the obscene wealth that was going on over here. The Yain Malchus, and it wasn't cheap wine, it was Yain Malchus. It was wine that was roy for a king, that was fitting for a king. Rav, and it wasn't, if you think that it was only a little bit, it was abundant. Kiyad HaMelech. And Kiyad HaMelech, they explain, means that just like they give to a king, they don't just give one kind of wine, they give many bottles, a whole array of wines that you could choose. So they gave to each person. The Ashtiyah Kados Enoines. And the shtiyah was kados, was proper, ein oines, without forcing. Kichein yisar hamelch, for so had the king established, decreed, al kol rab besai, on every master of his house, lasa is kirtzon yishvish, to do, to fulfill the will of each man. Vashtiyah kados ein oines, so Rashi says, lefi sheyesh seudais, there are feasts, there are parties where they force the people there to drink from a very big vessel. It's kind of like a peer pressure thing. They force them to drink from this huge cup, and there are people who don't want to do it. It's here, there was no such oinus. And the Malbim Negro explained that it means that there was so much wine that they didn't have to rush each other, finish up your cup, so I could have it. There were so many vessels available that they didn't have to rush each other. Because that's how the Melech established, that's how he decreed, Lasses Kitzon Ish V'Ish. So the Gra points out, that it's very ironic over here, that he was going through the Achashverosh was so anxious to please every person, to make sure that every single person, Migadol Bad Katan, from big to small, great to little, is fulfilled his every wish. And what ended up happening is that Achashverosh's own wish that his wife should come was nullified, was not fulfilled. And not only that, but that who Achashverosh's own heart was, you know, we played around with Akash Baruch Hu, changed Achashverosh's own heart. Changed here, Achashverosh is busy fulfilling everybody's wish. Everybody's wish is the law. Everybody's what everybody wants. That's the law of the day. And here, Achashverosh's own rutzen, his own will, is constantly been going up and down, changing. He wants Vashti. Doesn't want Vashti. Wants Esther. Akash Baruch Hu is manipulating it. What's the point of telling us, though, elaborating the whole wealth of the party? So the Gra says a very interesting thing. It seems to have no point. It seems to have no bearing on the rest of the story. The Gra says a very interesting thing that it's in order to tell you, give you an analogy for the schar of tzaddikim in the world to come.
Wow.
That we never really have any description of what it's going to be like for tzaddikim in Olam Ba. And here we have kind of just the Torah kind of goes off on and explaining, elaborating in great detail the tremendous wealth, a tremendous pleasure that was there for each person at this party in Olam Hazeh for Rishayim. So Alachas Kama Kama for Tzadikim will be much greater in Olam Haba. Another thing is that the point of elaborating on the king's great wealth and his great power in the beginning of the story, the Kli Chemda, as we say, Farhan Chumash, says that what the point is, because later at the end of the story, what ends up happening is that Ahasuerus had sent out letters decreeing that the Jews should be killed, and at the end he changed his mind and he nullifies those letters. A great king who rules over the entire world, 127 Medinos, who has this wealth, this insane amount of wealth, and he's so great, he's the greatest king in the world, and yet even he, because Akash Baruch changes his heart, is willing to go back on his own word and to nullify his own decree. I'm sorry, Gam Vashti Amalka. Also, Vashti, the queen, made a Mishnei Nashim, made a feast for the women, Beis Hamalchus, in the house of the king, Asher Lamelcha Chashverish, which was to Lamelcha Chashverish. What was the point of Vashti's feast? Why was she doing it? So there are those who say, they grow among them, that it was just really in order just to facilitate the whole nace of Vashti being killed and Esther taking her place. Because it was in the Beis HaMalchus. So what happened? They were able to hear each other. The men were able to hear their wives talking in their voices of their wives in the party of Vashti. And then they started to talk about their wives. Like Chazal say that they started talking when they were drunk. The women of Paras are the most beautiful. The women of Mada are the most beautiful. The women of Bava are the most beautiful. And that's what led to Ahasuerus demanding Vashti to come in. And from that was... came about the entire story. But the Malbim gives a more kind of political spin on it, which was that Ahasuerus' whole purpose here was to show that Vashti, even though she's a Bas Malachim, she's a royal blood, she is nothing without Ahasuerus. She herself is not a queen. She is only a queen by virtue of being married to Ahasuerus. And therefore he had Vashti make, if Vashti was the real queen, then she should have made a party for all the officers and all the noblemen. Why is she only making it for the wives? And if she's the real queen, then she should have made it in her own Beis HaMalchus, in her own palace. Instead, Ahasuerus has her make it in like an adjacent to his, to show that she's really just his wife, and his power doesn't stem from her. And not only that, but what's his next move? His next move is to go and demand that she comes in front of her, the Ches HaMalchus, that's to show, says the Malbim, to show that she is nothing by herself. She has no importance by herself. And not only that, but it's to show off, let's see the next pasuk. Vayoyim ha-shvi'i, kitoiv lev ha-melech vayoyim, on the seventh day, when the king's heart was kind of, what it was, jolly, I don't know, it was toiv vayayim. Omar leMuhumman, he said to Muhumman, "Bizaso charvino bixel va'avakso zesar v'charkas." Who were they? Shivas hasarisim, the seven officers, hamisharsim as pnei hamelch Ahasuerus, who served the melech Ahasuerus. They were personal servants. What did he tell them to do? Lahavi is Vashti hamalka lefnei hamelch b'chaser malchus, to bring Vashti hamalka before the king in her crown, in a royal crown. Laharois ha'amin v'hasarim, to show the amin, the peoples, the nations, and the sarim, and the nobleman, Esiyafia, her beauty, ki toivas ma'ariv, because she was very beautiful. So we know Chazal said that it means lefnei hamelech b'cheser malchus, only in her royal crown, and which is kind of crazy. I mean, she was a bas malachim. She was he's humiliating his wife, who's the queen of the whole empire. And we know he was drunk, but I mean, there's a limit. But maybe that's why he's called the Melech Tipish.
How long was he married?
Was he married to her before that? Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, he's trying to portray that he can't do anything about him, but obviously he wanted her yichus.
Right, he did want her yichus. Right, he wanted. He was trying to get both. He wanted her yichus, but on the other hand, he didn't want to be just acknowledged as the king just because of her. Right. So actually, the Malbim explains that why did he show off her beauty? It was to show, I'll show you everybody why I married Vashti. It's not because of her yichud, it's because of her beauty. And he learns that when it says b'cheser malchus, lefnei hamelch b'cheser malchus, means that she should come, doesn't mean, like Chazal say, that she should come in only in her king, in her crown. It means that she should come in, and then when she's in front of the king, she should put on her crown. When she comes in, when she enters the room, she shouldn't have her crown on. She should only put on her crown when she's in front of the king. That's to show, I married her for her beauty, not for her yichus, and she's not a queen until she comes in front of me. Okay, so we'll stop here.
Thanks so much, Clark.